You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, new Wisconsin job numbers show lower unemployment and a significant number of new jobs added. We look at what type of jobs they are and if wages are going up.
First, it's time for our weekly review of state news, the Wisconsin News Roundup.
The owners of the Milwaukee Bucks have agreed to a 30-year lease agreement with the owners of the team's future arena.
Federal judges decided voters who face major difficulties getting a voter ID may be able to vote without one. And the girls charged in the Slender Man case have asked to be released.
Robert Menser joins us now. He's a storytelling editor for the USA Today Network Wisconsin, based in Wausau. Rob, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Let's start off with this Milwaukee Bucks agreement. The Bucks organization has signed a 30-year lease agreement on their new stadium. This has been was a political issue big time in that last state budget. What are the details of this new contract?
Yeah, so this is finally finalized this week, and a 30-year lease is a long time. So the Bucks are really, really, really officially staying in Milwaukee, and I think that's a sigh of relief for a lot of the Bucks fans. The team will pay over $1 million a year, around $1.5 million per year in rent to the Wisconsin Center District in Milwaukee, a total of $45 million over the lease of the term. And that was finalized Wednesday. So it opens the door for construction to begin maybe in, they're hoping to have a groundbreaking in June and maybe start playing by the fall of 2018.
And part of this agreement is something that says, hey, you guys can't leave. At least you can't leave without consequences. What kind of penalties are there?
Yeah, pretty heavy penalties. I think that you'd have to think twice about it. The financial penalties are $550 million if the Bucks do decide to leave early. So I think that if they're going to get wooed by Seattle or somewhere, they're going to have to really cough up a lot of money. The overall cost of the project has gone up. It was they used to say it was estimated to be only a mere $500 million for this project, and now it's at $524 million in the final version. As I've been telling all my friends in Milwaukee, that I hope they enjoy their new stadium paid for by my tax dollars.
Well, let's get into our tax dollars. How is the state and then the county and city of Milwaukee kicking in?
Yeah, so the public funding is all told is about $250 million for the project. As you alluded to, a major political football during the budget process.
Political basketball, please, Rob. Political basketball.
political basketball. That's a common phrase, right? So it ended up being kicked out of the state budget there was an argument that is this really the best way to get return on tax dollars, but at any rate, I mean, it went through, and it's very popular in Milwaukee, and there's a lot of people in Milwaukee, so they're very pleased to have their basketball team.
And a lot of effort to build economic development around this thing, and other uses for the arena itself and the surrounding development.
Sure, and they expect to have concerts and other things. And there is certainly a tourist value. The sort of economic argument, I mean, there is an argument against it. A lot of economists will say that there is opportunity cost, that this money used in other sorts of economic development projects may do better. And that's a common argument around sports arenas. But on the other hand, sports are very popular, and so it's also a losing argument in the political arena.
Talking about some of the top news stories of the week with Rob Menser from the USA Today Network, Wisconsin. Well, another political basketball, Rob, that's been bouncing on a long time, Wisconsin's voter ID law. I thought all the court challenges had been sorted out, but nope, here comes one more this week that's not done yet, is moving forward this week, though.
Right. So ever since 2011, this is a bouncing political basketball. So it's been blocked. It's been reinstated different times, different judges. And after this year's April primary, it was seen as the first big test of the law, the first time that it was in effect in an election with a lot of people voting. So sort of perhaps a surprise that there is one last legal challenge remaining. Now, it is very narrow. There were some of the earlier challenges that ended up being shot down were much broader claims that the law broadly disenfranchises people of color or other sort of classes of voters who are specifically protected by the Voting Rights Act. This claim doesn't do that. This claim is about the specific people who don't have access to a state ID and for various complicated reasons can't get them without paying a fee. And it's a poll tax is unconstitutional. You can't charge someone to vote. An example of this, back in 2011, I interviewed an elderly woman named Ruthel Frank of Brokaw, Wisconsin, who was born at home, had no birth certificate, and her name, her last name, was misspelled in the state registry. So it actually costs money to get that state registry corrected. So in order for her to get the birth certificate she would need to get the state ID that she would need to vote, she would have to pay money. So it's sort of like, this is not a common occurrence, but it's a constitutional right. Ruthel Frank has a right to vote. So this is the specific challenge that is moved forward is people in a situation like that where they, for whatever, reasons, don't have the documents and don't have a way to get them for free.
Now, a federal court gave the go-ahead to hear this case, but this is not an existential threat to the voter ID law, as I understand it. It's not something, unless some court goes really far beyond what anybody expects, it's not going to overturn the law. The most, and correct me if I'm wrong, it would do is say, okay, for these very specific cases, you, Wisconsin, have to remedy that. Do I have that right?
Right. So maybe they could vote if they have a legal affidavit, they'd be allowed to cast a ballot. I suppose there's sort of a fantasy world version. Let's not give it too short shrift. We have a new U.S. Supreme Court justice seated. There's a new U.S. Supreme Court with a liberal majority. They decide to hear this narrow little case, and they use it to strike down the entire voter ID law. Now, that's really not going to happen. I think that's pretty unlikely. But I mean, it's theoretically possible. And I suppose that the sort of opponents of voter ID, liberal opponents, would rather there be something, some challenge alive than not.
Any idea of a timeline on this legal challenge?
Oh, who knows? the federal courts will do what they're going to do, I suppose.
Well, moving on to another story, the two teens accused of stabbing, attempted murder on their schoolmate, based on the fictional Slender Man online character, the so-called Slender Man case, this thing is still in the courts. They and their lawyers are making movement to get them released from custody. What's the latest in that story?
Yeah, so this was just today, just a little bit earlier today, was this petition was denied. This is a disturbing case. As you say, it's about 2 years old. It happened May 31st, 2014. Two 12-year-old girls from Waukesha County lured a friend into the woods, stabbed her 19 times, left her to die. She survived when she was found by a bicyclist who was passing by in that area. So, a bizarre story that became more bizarre as we learned that these girls had done so to convince this fictional sort of internet myth character named Slender Man, who they believed they would go and live with in a castle in the forest in northern Wisconsin. So one of these girls, now 13, has been diagnosed with schizophrenia. That's very rare in someone this young, but it's not unheard of. And in this legal filing, her lawyers argued that treatment for schizophrenia has stabilized her, and that it would be safe for her and good for her to go and live with her grandparents in Waukesha County. Both girls also petitioned to have the amount of their bail, $500,000 in bail, reduced. That was declined today. They're both being charged as adults with first degree intentional homicide. But there's still a chance that their cases could end up being transferred to juvenile court. That is one of many things that is still ongoing in this case.
And Rob, before we're done, apart from the specific details of this case, this has raised questions about trying youth juveniles in adult court, especially starting at an age as young as 12.
For sure, and add in some hard questions about mental illness. So can a mentally ill 12-year-old, to what extent can she be held accountable for actions that she took, even quite horrifying, quite extremely violent actions? It's a hard question to think through, and it's I think shocking. The girls' names, their pictures are broadcast throughout the news media, and it is shocking to see girls so young, both involved in such a shocking case, but also being treated in exactly the way of that adults would be in a similar case.
We'll leave it there for now. Thanks for joining us today, Rob.
Thank you.
That's Robert Mentzer with USA Today Network Wisconsin, recapping the biggest headlines around the state in our Wisconsin News Roundup.